Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the very first day of July, Anno Domini 2017. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. As governments and organizations around the world grappled on Wednesday with the impact of a cyber attack that froze computers and demanded a ransom for their release, victims received a clear warning from security experts not to pay a dime in the hopes of getting back their data. The hacker's email address was shut down and they had lost the ability to communicate with their victims and by extension to restore access to computers. If the hackers had wanted to collect ransom money, said cybersecurity experts, their attack was an utter failure. That is, if that was actually their goal. Increasingly sophisticated ransomware assaults now have cybersecurity experts questioning what the attacks are truly after. Is it money? Mayhem? Delivering a political message? In the attack that hit computers from Ukraine to the United States on Tuesday, financial gain may be the least likely motive. Either it was a sophisticated actor who knew what they were doing, except screwed up horribly on the part where they actually get paid, or it wasn't about the ransom in the first place. Ransomware, one of the oldest and most prolific forms of cyber attack, relies on essentially locking computers out of their own computer systems until they pay a ransom. Last year, cybersecurity researchers estimated the criminals made over $1 billion, that's billion with a B, through ransomware, with victims ranging from the chief executives of Fortune 500 companies to mom-and-pop businesses and private individuals. The attack on Tuesday, like a similar assault in May called WannaCry, spread wider and faster than previous forms of known ransomware, but combined, they barely banked $100,000. WannaCry spread by combining traditional ransomware with a worm or a mechanism by which the attack could quickly grow. It was the first of its kind, said cybersecurity researchers, in that its goal appeared to be spreading as quickly as possible rather than to successfully collect ransoms from victims. The attack on Tuesday is being called by different names, including Petya, NotPetya, and GoldenEye. Like WannaCry, it also appeared built for speed as it spread across systems exploiting a single unprotected machine to then infect machines across a network. WannaCry's spread was halted by an independent cybersecurity researcher who discovered that by registering a single domain for about $10, he could stop the attack in its tracks. Though Tuesday's assault does not appear to have finished, it is no longer likely to generate significant payments because a German email provider shut down the email address associated with the ransom. These types of attacks are just going to keep happening, and we've known about them since we first saw how big WannaCry was going to be last month. The real question is whether these are just practice runs for the big ones. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is NotPetya ransomware, and your choices are money, mayhem, message, and mistake. So far, we've got about 18 votes. Mayhem is in the lead, followed by message, followed by money. One person thinks it's a mistake. I'm beginning to think I might agree with that person. It might have been a mistake, or it certainly was a message. Anyway, if you'll have more to say about this. So if you go down to the forums, that is to say, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The first link is the forums, and the second forum down is poll discussion. The first item on the poll discussion is 1 July 17, NotPetya ransomware. So far, three people have posted, and you can join them there. You can also, of course, join us, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Ransomware is getting to be more and more prevalent.
Yeah, more. Yeah, definitely. And the thing that is, though, is a lot of it, though, folks can simply avoid, because it, usually flashes up on the screen, and they panic.
Right.
first off, you know, the best thing I always tell folks, just turn the computer off.
Yep.
Just turn it off, because 99% of it is just bogus, and they want you to fool you into thinking that, yeah, your machine has been hacked because it flashes up that screen. We've got your machine, you know, blah, 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 going on and on and on. If you turn it off, wait a minute or two, and then turn it back on.
Yeah, most of those are not real messages. They're pop-ups in your browser. But when it is real, one of the issues that people have is they don't have backups.
Right.
I mean, this is the whole thing with ransomware. We've locked up all your data. Well, they don't have your data.
No.
They just encrypted your data. So if you can reformat your machine, bring it all back, and put back all your data from yesterday.
See, that's, again, where it's handy to put everything up on the cloud.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you've got it up on the cloud, they can't get at anything at your machine.
Right. Well, mostly.
Yeah.
But the big thing is you need multiple backups. You need local backup, an offsite backup, a cloud backup at the very least. And the more of those you have, and particularly the ones that are not automatically connectable to your machine without special software, those are the ones that will be safe from any sort of ransomware. So, for example, one of the things I do is I pay, what is it, about $100 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I pay $25 a year.
That's...
for a site on the internet that allows me to have unlimited data.
Yeah.
So I use it to back up my machine. Duh. And you can only get to it by using a particular program with username, password, et cetera, et cetera. So that's never going to be encrypted by anybody.
See, I guess I've gotten in the habit that any documents or anything else that I want to use are sitting up on the cloud.
Yep.
I don't keep them down on my machine.
Yep.
That way, I don't have to worry about if something all of a sudden happens to my machine, it dies, that everything is, you know, gone.
Right.
It's there. And then same with the other program that I use, which is vital for me, is my Quicken.
Yep.
Every night I've got it set up so it automatically backs it up to the Quicken site. And I think that one, like you said, that cost me all of, I think, $25 for the year.
Yep.
Because my file is so small, I back that up there. So no matter what,
yep.
I can grab it.
At the absolute worst, you lose today's data.
Yeah, that's okay. I can recreate that because I just go to my bank statement and compare the two
right
on where they are.
Right.
One of the things to kind of be wary of, though, is backup is good, but syncing can be dangerous.
Right.
So if you're using Google Drive or Dropbox or iCloud Drive, that's a sync. So anytime you make a change on your computer, it syncs that change up to the cloud. So if that file gets encrypted with ransomware, that synced, locked, encrypted file is up to the cloud.
Right.
And you can't get it back because it's synced.
Right.
Most of the services offer...
If you sync.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, Google Drive and Dropbox and things like that, folders on your computer, those sync automatically.
Well, I don't use the folder.
Right.
So I'm good.
Yeah.
You
same
know
here.
Better.
I know better.
Yeah. For the average folk, you probably have Dropbox installed. You might have Google Drive. It's just a folder on your desktop. Anything you put in that folder gets synced to the cloud. So you may think, yeah, I've got a cloud backup. It's not quite a backup.
Right.
So if you accidentally delete the file, it's deleted from the cloud because that's what sync does. It makes it the same. If it's ransom encrypted on your computer, it's ransom encrypted on the cloud. So that's why you want to have a separate backup that doesn't delete the old versions. We call that versioning. Now, Google Drive does do versioning.
Right.
So you can go back a version or two, even if you do the syncing. But you can't go back forever.
Right.
And that's the problem.
Right. I even have a drive on my network that I don't mount on my desktop.
Yeah.
I use a program, an FTP type program,
mm-hmm.
a secure FTP type program to sync things to it.
Yep. And that's how the WannaCry virus transmitted, is through file sharing, basically, SMB. So your computer got infected because the guy in the next cubicle's computer was infected.
Right.
So if you have a network file share that you put all your files on, that network file share gets infected because it's an SMB file share.
Yeah. Right. But, yeah, I have a little 3.5-inch flop hard drive.
Yeah.
That I sit there periodically, turn it on. I set up a reminder usually about every other week, and I'll grab the stuff also and just move it over there just to have, like you said, just as to cover my butt.
Yep.
It's up there. Otherwise, everything else is up there in Google.
Yeah. And that's the way, you know, we have to
and
learn.
The syncing, I control that.
Right.
My contacts and all that stuff, yes, I let that go ahead and do that automatically. But as far as photos and documents, everything else, I control
right.
that.
Right. And we have to learn to back up. We have to learn
It's not hard. I mean, you could set up. There's so many programs out there, reminder programs and everything else. And I always tell folks, you know what? You're sitting down to have dinner.
Right.
You can have it do it then. Just go over, click on it, and have it back up then. It won't take long, just like scanning your machine. Oh, it takes a long time to scan. Well, if you go, you know, you're going out for dinner or just sitting, you know, going to fix dinner, do it then. Or right. you're at night, before you go to bed, turn the monitor off, leave the machine on, start the scan, turn the monitor off, and let it do it overnight.
Yep.
You come back in the morning, you know, you come down in the morning, you want to check your mail, boom, it's finished, and you're good to go.
And you're good to go.
Yeah.
Easy to do. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay, I have three quick questions about cell phones.
Yeah.
First of all, which was the phone that recently caught fire because of battery problems?
You can pick any one of several.
It was the 7. It was the
Galaxy
7 Note.
Yeah,
I had it, and it was actually only 2 of them really caught fire. You know, and there were reports of some others getting warm, but because it happened on an airline and everything else, you know, they wound up turning it in, and I wound up waiting because they wanted me to turn it in and, oh, get the 8. No, it was the 7, the Edge and all that. And I held off. And they go, well, you know, it could catch on fire. And I go, yeah, and I could get hit by a truck tomorrow, too. So I waited because I wasn't having any issues. And I waited out for the Google phone. And I love it. The camera is fantastic. The phone doesn't come with all that bloatware. And it's just great. I love it.
Yeah, sounds good. So you said that was the Galaxy 7 and the Galaxy Note?
Galaxy Note 7.
Yep.
The Note 7, okay.
Yep.
And one of the things that we had read after they completed, well, they said it, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. The problem was a manufacturing issue. People want long battery life in their phones, and so one way to do that is to put a bigger battery in the phone. So one of the stories that they think they figured the cause is the battery in the phone was just a hair too big, and when they squeezed the phone case together, they actually squeezed the battery and put too much stress on it, which caused it to prematurely fail.
Oh, I see.
And to prematurely fail in a lithium-ion battery is burst into fire and explode.
Oops.
But I just did one of those this morning. What is it, 8-year-old battery, I think it was? Started to swell and pushed up on the bottom of the trackpad because your battery on your laptop is pretty much under your trackpad.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to replace that battery before it swole too far.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we're going to take a... We ought to at least get your question in your second question.
Second question is, which was the phone that had the stylus problem? When you put the stylus in upside down, it would lock in. You couldn't get it back out again.
Yeah.
That was also one of the notes, wasn't it?
I think it was the
five.
Same. Might have been the 5.
Yeah, it was
that
the
one
five.
I don't remember off the top
right,
of
because
my head.
That was the 5, and because the 7, they made it so you couldn't.
Put it backwards, right.
Put it in backwards.
And I read a few people that I had heard that happen to. Samsung's answer was, well, read the manual. It tells you what way to put it in.
Yeah.
So you can put it in backwards, and it fits, sort of, but then when you try to pull it out, you destroy the socket.
Right.
And if, you obviously didn't read the manual because you did it wrong.
Right. So it's your fault.
So the new model, you can't put it in backwards.
Right.
Which is the way they should have done it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That was the Galaxy 5, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, hear the music.
Yeah, hang on for your third question. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Carl from Pottstown, PA, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
You were still late.
No, because the right audio just started and it still filled odd on the audio.
And we have Carl. It is sound bites. We have Carl from Pottstown, PA for his third question. What's up, Carl?
Yes, third question is this, and I'm embarrassed to ask it because it's so simple I probably should know the answer, but on a home web browser, most web browsers have tabs, so you could open up a separate web page on each tab and switch back and forth between the two of them. But on my Android cell phone, smartphone, I don't have tabs for some reason. I guess it just doesn't happen in the cell phone browser world yet.
Yes, but, it does.
Since they don't have tabs, how do you open up more than one web page and then
they
switch
back? They do have tabs, they're just not really tabs. What you do is you can open up multiple pages. You know how if you pull down from the top of the screen, you get the drop-down top menu thing?
Yeah.
Well, instead of that, come down just a little bit and pull down, and you should see if you can have more than one tab. I'm just starting up my cell phone browser right now, and for some reason, yeah. If you pick the URL, you know, where you type in the URL, if you pull that down, you'll see that it becomes a smaller page. There's a plus sign in the corner. You can add pages that way.
Okay.
And then you can scroll through them, and you can pick the one you want, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's just a bunch of stuff that you can do with that, but it's got to be – it's a kind of a hidden feature.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have multiple – you may have multiple pages open.
We see that a lot on the iDevices is that some websites will spawn a new page.
Right.
And depending on your browser, you get a new page or a new tab or both. And people don't realize it because it's the screen is so small, it's behind the first one.
Right.
So, you know, you bring down your tab browser and suddenly you might have 100 tabs open, and that explains why the phone's running so slow.
Exactly. So if you, like I said, if you go to the URL, the box we put in the address bar, and pull that down, it becomes, if you've got more than one, you'll see, you know, like a pages.
Doesn't thing. The icon show you how many tabs you have open?
It should.
Yeah, so if you have like six pages open, there'll be a little square with a six in it.
Okay, great. I'll try that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Yeah, the web browsers in phones are much more capable than we think they are. The problem is, you know, honestly, I'm not entirely certain anybody has a phone... user interfaces down right yet.
The screen is so small that we're hard to place all the user interface elements that we're used to.
Right.
So on your computer, you might have a bookmark bar with all your bookmarks. Well, if you show your bookmark bar on your phone, you lose that space for the web browser. And so people want to see most of the page. That they can, so it hides the bookmarks. It might even hide the URL address window while you're not typing. So needing to swipe around,
right.
Swipe around, and you may find where that interface is.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thank you for being here on the holiday weekend.
Sure.
Couple of things on my wife's laptop. It's an HP Envy. Windows 10, i7 processor, 12 gigs RAM, 1 terabyte hard drive. Got Avast and anti-spyware and malware bytes on it. Been getting messages that I have to review my security settings before I can go to Creator 10 update.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it. Well, finally, last night, I went down and hit the notifications button in the bottom right. And it opened up, and then it actually took me to what it wanted me to do to review the security settings, because I couldn't figure out where they were, and it took me there. Got that done, and then 4 hours later,
yeah,
it finally got done putting in Creator 10.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
And the problem is I started at 10 o'clock at night, so...
Yeah, well, too bad for you.
A little bleary-eyed by the end of that exercise.
Yes, you were.
But it seems to run okay, and nothing blew up, so we're okay there.
Now, did Microsoft take notice from auto-downloading the Windows 10 update to begin with? Everyone complained about all the disk space being used, and so now they don't auto-download it, and now everyone will complain about how long it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize. The download process took forever. And then it said it was preparing to install, and that took forever.
Right.
And then it installed rather rapidly, but then it was preparing the machine to run it, and that took god-awful forever.
Two forevers, yeah.
Yeah, and my biggest problem is that my main machine is a solid-state drive, and I'm used to that being much quicker, because that machine ran it also last night, and that took under 2 hours.
Right. Right, and almost all of that is disk access, and you're right. When you have a solid-state drive, it happens so much faster than a regular hard drive.
And that first delay is downloading the 5 or 6 or 7 gigabyte file it needs. So if you have multiple computers at home, you might be better off downloading the installer once from Microsoft, putting it on like a flash drive, and then going around to each of your computers so it doesn't have to re-download that whole thing again and again and again.
Yeah, main machine's on a wire, and this one's on wireless. So,
well, that's the other issue.
Time difference to the wire versus the wireless and the SSD versus the hard drive. So,
yep.
Right. Well, yes, and it's both things. If you have a fast enough connection, like we've been saying, for most home users, the maximum speed you're going to get out of wireless is about 24 megabits. So, if you're doing 60 or 100 or a gig. Obviously, a wired connection is going to be able to do that, and it'll be much faster. The other thing you can think about doing, for those of you out there who haven't done this yet, if your laptop does plug in, plug it in before you do the update. That'll help.
Yeah, so even if you are wireless, go ahead and plug an Ethernet wire into your router, and that will help speed up the install, too.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, I was halfway through the install and 2 hours into a four-hour process when I thought about, gee, maybe I should have plugged a wire into this.
Yeah, right. By that point, it's too late.
Yeah, and I didn't realize going into it quite how involved this Creator 10 update was.
Well, don't they tell you it'll take a while? But nobody thinks that a while is going to be 4 hours.
Yeah, well, you know, and I figured at that time of the night I wasn't bumping into a lot of traffic on the network.
Well, it's only that time of the night in your house. It's middle of the afternoon somewhere else.
Yeah, well,
right. It's really who's downloading what from which server.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in any event, what I was working to try and resolve an issue, but that was just fun and excitement from folks at Microsoft to just make my Friday night more interesting.
Yeah.
The malware bytes. I had upgraded to the premium package a while back, and it's been running fine on my main machine. The wife's laptop, it runs, but I keep getting this error that says, quote, the malware bytes anti-exploit service is taking too long to start. Please reboot your computer to restart protection. You reboot, and you get the little window again after it times out again. I've uninstalled it, reinstalled it. I uninstalled it with Revo, and then I reinstalled it, and it said, yeah, it's installed and all that good stuff. It says you're current, and it runs a scan just fine. And I keep getting the error. Now, after last night's little adventures in updating, this morning I turned it on. It just came back up again. Okay, never mind. I get a thing where your version is out of date. I click that and install it while I was waiting for the music to stop. And now I'm still getting the same thing. Malware bytes anti-exploit service is taking too long to start. Please reboot your computer to restart protection. And I've tried their forum page, and I got all kinds of stuff about Firefox, but it wasn't this. It was something totally different.
Yeah, I'm finding similar questions for that just after the recent Microsoft update.
Yeah.
Well, mine happened before the update, and it's happening after the update. So is there some setting that I'm using Firefox for my web browser. Is there something I need to set in Firefox to allow anti-exploit to kick in? or to work with it.
Does this only happen when you're in Firefox?
Well, I'm not in Firefox right now, and Anti-Exploit kicked up and said the service is taking too long to start.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with Firefox.
Okay.
I think it has to do with the program itself. One of the things that, and again, I'm you know, who knows, but one of the things that, one of the things that happens with something like Anti-Exploit is it goes back to, it checks in with malware bytes. And I'm thinking that it is possible that there's an issue actually at their end.
I see one note here on their forums that sometimes the Malwarebytes Anti-Exploit service tries to start before networking services are ready, and therefore it can't get to the internet. And so there was there's a suggestion to edit your registry and put a delay to start. But no, I don't want to do that.
Just as a sidebar here, the main computer, or my computer, has the same version of Windows and the same version of Malwarebytes, and it's running just fine.
So I'm wondering if there's something else in that computer, then, that's preventing it from running.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an HP laptop, and Lord only knows what they did.
Right. You can add an auto start delay value to Malwarebytes in the registry, but I don't really want to get into that. But
okay,
I really don't want to get into that.
Yeah, I don't either.
If you've still got the files on your disk from when you downloaded it to install it, if you unzip that file, you'll see something called MBAE-setup, and that's the Malwarebytes Anti-Exploit service. And so if you reinstall that might help.
Okay, what was the file name again?
MBAE-setup, and then dash some number, whatever the version number is.
All right. Well,
But what you should probably do is uninstall the Malwarebytes Anti-Exploit, and you do that through the add remove programs.
I also found a bat file that uninstalls everything.
I don't know if you need everything. But
everything of Malwarebytes, yeah.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how to link that piece of this giant 16-page issue fixed.
Yeah, right. Steve is working on giving you the batch file, but basically what you do is you uninstall the anti-exploit file program, which is, you can do that in add remove programs. Then reboot the computer to make sure it's gone. That may not strictly be necessary, but why not? And then after the reboot, run the MBAE setup program again, and then see what happens. Some people are saying that they needed to put it in a different folder, whatever. But the idea is that reinstalling that particular piece of it has solved the issue for a number of people.
Malwarebytes Anti-Exploit for...
Yeah, don't do that on the phone. We got people waiting.
Yep. I'm just looking to see if I can find it here. So, yeah, okay. We'll have to go hunting for it.
Yep.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Have fun.
And, quick item. When I first called and talked to Dave, usually when he puts me on hold, I hear the show.
Yeah.
And what I'm getting is music until he comes back and gets my name, and then I'm getting the show. So I spent quite a bit of time. I had to leave the radio on in the background so I could...
Yeah, well, the problem is there's two ways that we can put you on hold. One is because you're the next caller, and you'll hear the show. And the other is you're just on hold in the system, and sometimes that's the music.
Ah. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, this, again, this radio, excuse me, this telephone system was designed for high school
offices,
not for us. Again, you know, first, let me thank everyone who was kind enough to become a member of this station or renew their membership or up their membership. We had a mini drive last week because we were about $10,000 short, and with the money that came in through your generosity and the generosity of folks down at the Jazz Festival. We did make our goal, and that's all thanks to you. So thank you all very, very much. But if anybody out there would like to donate another $100,000, we could upgrade our phone system. Until then, we're going to take a quick break while you call up and make that pledge. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Mark?
Good day, gentlemen.
It is. How are you?
I'm well. Wanted to go back to the gentleman that was talking about the Windows 10 creator update.
Yeah, we know him. He's not a gentleman.
Downloaded in the background. And now it's prompting me to restart, which I have been putting off because I'm not ready to deal with that yet. But a little thing I was reading, I don't remember what site it was, if it was from Microsoft or from somebody else, they suggested to turn off all your security.
Yep.
And disconnect any external drives.
Yep.
Before installing the update.
Yep.
Now, I know mine says now that I'm ready for a restart to finish installing. Now, when that restart happens, will my antivirus be running in the background? 'Cause usually you get those funky screens that they show you when it's installing.
It depends on how you turn them off. Most of the antivirus programs will have an off until restart option.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when you restart, it will turn back on. But I would check them all manually just to be safe.
Okay.
And the reason they do that, and we see that with a lot of installers, they'll recommend turning off your antivirus during the install, is it's very tough for the installer to know this is a good program installing or this is a bad program installing.
It's tough for the antivirus program.
Right, yeah. Because it's made to stop changes to your system.
Right.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Which maybe that
might be. The question I had was whether it knows, if the antivirus actually started when it's doing those updates when it's in that limbo state where it hasn't started Windows yet.
Theoretically, no.
But better off to just turn it off.
Yes, better off to just turn it off.
One of them said to actually uninstall all your, you know, security, then reinstall it when it's done. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh.
Just turn it off.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be done, but I think it's overkill.
I would just turn it off.
And that almost might be Joe's problem, the earlier caller with the anti-exploit thing not working right. Maybe something in his antivirus stopped.
It was Andy.
Andy, was it?
Yeah.
This is Joe, isn't it?
This is Mark.
Mark.
We haven't had Joe today.
Yet.
I don't know
Joe,
who Joe
I'm
is.
Sorry, Joe. Call in, and then I can say it was you. Yeah. Yeah, so it's maybe something in his antivirus is preventing something that Malwarebytes needs installed properly.
That's possible.
Right. So, like I said, I figured I'd throw that out there because I did read that. So, I guess I'm going to tackle it tomorrow afternoon.
There you go.
And see what happens.
Good luck. Start early.
I will. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, he'll find that when he reboots, he's about halfway through the process. Again, it's going to be preparing to install pieces and parts, and those pieces and parts install, and then it'll actually boot Windows, and that can take a while. I have my laptop is very fast with lots and lots of RAM, and I'm on Greenlight, and it still took forever to make that update.
Well, I did, you know, the update, and what I was ticked off about. It's one, it messed up my printers, and the classic shell, it uninstalled that.
Yep.
So I had to go back in, put classic shell back in there, and then play around with the printers again. So I got to set up my wife's printer again, too, because the HP printer wanted to confuse it with this other DeskJet printer that we've got there, too.
Microsoft knows better. You must have obviously had the wrong settings.
That's right. Stop doing things Microsoft doesn't want you to do.
That's why
Citizen.
I still like my Chromebook.
That's right. It just updated the other day again. yesterday, the day before, whenever I actually updated it. Yesterday. And I always update. I always look every Saturday. Usually it's on a two-week cycle, but I look every Friday to make sure that it's, you know, I'm ready for Saturday.
Don't update during the show.
Right, right. Well, it happens in the background, so I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really don't. I don't care. It's the least obtrusive update I've ever seen. Even less obtrusive than Linux, which is a little hard to believe.
Oh, did you hear about the WannaCry variant for Linux?
Yes.
Since Linux also uses SMB, someone made a Linux variant.
Yep. There is no secure operating system. I got another letter the other day from somebody who said, you poor Windows people, I'm a Mac guy, we don't get viruses. Yes. Yes, you do.
You get malware, okay.
I don't care what you call it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because the lines are so blurry.
Yep.
You know, you can be pedantic if you want to be, and that's, you know, whatever works, whatever lets you sleep at night. But the fact is that malware happens on every type of machine and different types of malware, whatever you want to call it, I don't really care. And so we've got people who are unprotected out there because they're too smug to use an antivirus program.
And what's almost worse now is the proliferation of fake ransomware notices and fake virus notices, because they panic you even worse.
Right.
Oh my God. And then, so, you know, you run your AV program and it doesn't find anything.
Right.
Because it was a fake notice.
Right.
But it still panics you.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
A suggestion for the guy you didn't want to go into the registry with.
Yeah.
Services.nsc, you can usually set delayed startup in there.
Oh, yeah, using MSC, that's right. You can change your startup stuff for that, and you can do all kinds of interesting things in MSC. That's a good point. Thank you. Thank all you, right. Bob. That's a great point.
Have a good day.
You too. MSC, which I think stands for Microsoft Startup Center, is a program that lets you change the way startup stuff works in Windows. And
there's, what is it, automatic, manual, disabled, or delayed?
Right. Excuse me.
So that will let the malware byte service wait, you know, tell it to wait 30 seconds or a minute until the networking is started up and running. So the anti-exploit service can check the network to see if there's an update.
Right, exactly right. And so you have some control there. Not quite as great as being able to get into the registry and screwing around, which also causes more problems. So use MSC.
With great power comes great ability to really screw things up.
Exactly. Holy moly, that's true.
Doesn't roll off the tongue as well, though.
Right. You can just type from the start menu, go to the search box, type msconfig, and there you are. You're in the system configuration tool. Go to the startup tab, and there it is.
That one's just on or off in msconfig.
Well, no, can't you set the things as well? Maybe not.
No, not in msconfig. You want to go to the services control management. So type services.msc.
Right.
And that will take you into the service control management.
Right. So there are actually lots of things that you can do to control Windows.
Mm-hmm.
They're just non-obvious. The problem is we get too complacent with our graphical user interfaces, and if we can't find it on a menu right away, we assume it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, when the reality is there's lots of hidden stuff, mainly because you shouldn't be playing with that stuff if you don't know what you're doing.
And so often I get frustrated trying to teach people, especially my wife. I can't teach my family.
That's true.
People tell me wonderful, you know, what a wonderful teacher I am when I'm going through seminars, but I just can't teach my family.
Yeah.
No, that's crossing a line.
Yeah. And I
believe that's definitely, you know, that's playing with a Russian roulette with your marriage.
Yeah. So you say go to the file menu, choose print. And so I see them go to the file menu, and they'll move the cursor up and down the file menu, pass the print command 16 times, and say, I don't see it. and then move on to another menu.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's the third one down.
Yep.
Look a little bit harder. It's like when your mom, when you can't find your socks and your mom says, look harder.
Yeah.
So when you can't find the print command, look harder. It's right there. I saw you go past it three times.
When I was working at RIT, when I first started there, the lady across the hall came over and said, I'm having problems with my Mac. Can you help me? Well, I'm not a Mac guy, but I used to have a Mac. And so I went over to help her, and her menus were all in Chinese.
Ah.
But I remembered which one yep. was the print menu and what the stuff in the print menu was. So I assumed they were all in the same order. So yep. I could go down and say, well, you need to, well, not the print menu in this particular case, it was the file menu, but
yeah.
I could go down and say, you need to be here and here and try this and do that. And what does that say? Oh, yeah, that's the one you want. Go.
Yep.
But man, oh man, that's back in the day when graphical user interfaces were new. So we were memorizing everything because we had to. Now nobody does. It's like when I was younger.
Whole different ball game.
Oh, yeah. When I was younger, I worked at Worldwide News, as a matter of fact. And people would come in and they'd hand me a stack of magazines. And I'd say, oh, yeah, $4.95, $7.95, $3.95, $2.95, $1.95. That's $15.83.
And you did the tax in your head, too, didn't
and
you?
And did the tax in my head, too. plus 7%, and that's blah, blah, blah. And give me your money, and here's your change. Now I would look at that stuff and go, I don't even know where the prices are on this
page. And that building, that's no longer there.
Isn't it?
No.
Yeah.
I just went by there, I think it was Wednesday, I was heading downtown. I had to go down through there. And, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
That was an amazing place.
That was like an institution.
Yeah, that was an amazing place with amazing people. I actually very much
eclectic.
Enjoyed my job there. Yeah, it was that. It certainly was that. Nice place to work, good people. I very much enjoyed my time there. So, did I mention it's 4th of July weekend? I don't think I did. 4th
no.
of July weekend, I want to wish every single one of you felicitations of the holiday. It's the birthday of our nation. That's a beautiful thing. We're very privileged to live in what I think is the greatest country on earth. And
used to be.
And we're all delighted. So celebrate by buying a mattress and having a cookout or whatever it is you do.
Mattress
is the President's Day.
4th of July sales.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been seeing fireworks, little pop-up fireworks stands around town. New York's laws must have relaxed a bit.
You
could only buy sparklers, but now you can buy a little bit more than that.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been hearing them going off already.
Yeah.
I knew it was 4th of July coming up when I saw billboards for a couple of places in Pennsylvania to sell fireworks.
Yep. We're just across the border. It's still a two-hour drive just across the border.
South of the border.
Oh, I love south of the border.
What a great place.
It's so tacky. But it's
the worst. It's the worst, and I love it. I do. I love it. We used to go there fairly regularly. I was driving my father back from Washington. No, from Florida, visiting his brother. And we came back up, and we went through. I said, Dad, it's been a week. I've done everything you want to do. We're stopping at south of the border. So we stopped, and we went in. My father said, where have you taken me?
Yeah.
What is this place? He's the one who didn't want to leave. In terms of the ransomware, we say this all the time, and so many people don't listen to us. Please make a backup. Make a backup right now while you're sitting down listening to this show. You've got a whole nother hour of this nonsense to get through. Listen to the show, but while you're listening, make a backup. It isn't all that difficult to do. Get a CD or a DVD or get a thumb drive or put it all up in some sort of online thing. I don't care how you do it. Make a backup. Make a backup. And then go out and buy a whole bunch more thumb drives and make more backups.
Yep.
Thumb drives are cheap. They're cheap insurance.
And that's almost the only mitigation for ransomware, as Nick pointed out in a story this morning. Even if you pay the ransom, you may never get your files back.
That's right.
Which is why you never negotiate with terrorists anyway. But right. You may never get your files back. Yeah, the police may have already caught them. Or the ISP shut down their mail service.
Right.
We have heard from even big companies now are starting to buy bitcoins to have as ransomware insurance. No, right. That's not ransomware insurance.
It really isn't. It's just giving people money.
Yeah.
And the best way to do it is to make backups. Look, I used to be a systems administrator. I was a systems administrator for 20 years. And if there ever came a time when we had been hit with ransomware and I did not have a backup, I would have to commit harakiri or seppuku or whichever one is the more honorable one. I probably should do the more dishonorable
one. Yeah.
But the basic idea is you need backups. You need backups. Listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. We'll be back and for a whole nother hour of this nonsense. So don't get excited. You have plenty of time to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you in just a few minutes for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Yes, yes, we are. We're talking about sound bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner at this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You got a whole nother hour of this stuff. So here's an interesting story. Google's decision to stop scanning Gmail users' emails in order to target them with personalized advertisements has been given a qualified welcome by privacy campaigners. Google revealed the change in a blog at the end of last week. They promised to make the move before the year's end to bring the consumer version of Gmail in line with its business edition. They had faced much criticism over the years for the scans. The measure helped justify the cost of offering the public 1 gigabyte of free webmail storage in 2004, an offer that was so much greater than the competition at the time that many originally believed it to be a joke. However, UK-based campaign group Privacy International tried to block the scans once it became apparent they were the cost of signing up for the service. The organization tried and failed to get the country's data privacy regulator to intervene. Then a decade later, Microsoft ran a series of advertisements in which it first depicted a Gmail man searching through people's messages and then went on to accuse the search giant of crossing the line, causing its customers to be scroogled. Google's blog notes that users can opt out of seeing personalized ads in any one of its services by changing their account settings, which I have done. I'd forgotten that Google was even doing ads because the first thing I did was turn off ads.
Yeah.
And the ad scans have helped justify the cost of providing Gmail to consumers for free. Google's move is absolutely a step in the right direction. Let's hope it encourages others to follow suit. While the ad-driven scan should soon stop, Gmail messages will still be scanned by Google to provide artificial intelligence-powered smart replies, malware protection, and sorting for search queries, which nobody seems to have a problem with. So do you care if Google auto-scans your mail? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. just like our friend Bodan did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bodan, what's up?
Greetings, guys. Hey, here's the deal. I've got an external hard drive. It's Western Digital My Passport, and it was originally bought and backed up all my stuff when I had the old computer. Now that I've got the new computer, about a year old, I've got some of the stuff backed up on flash drives, but I want to hook up this Western Digital external passport and back up some more stuff, and this is where the issue is, and I'm not sure what to do. The new computer recognizes that this device is used on another computer, and now where I logged in and opened it up, it says all your demailer sync data for this profile will be deleted. Are you sure you want to continue? Of course, I don't want to delete the stuff in there because it's stuff that I want to save from computer A, but now that I've got also computer B, I want to add additional stuff, maybe in an additional folder. What do I do?
Use a different backup program? Which backup program are you using?
I was just basically hooking up this external hard drive to, like, for example, if I did it with the old computer, I would just hook it up, open it up, and then synchronize the files and just add, like my files and stuff like that.
What program are you using to synchronize?
Oh, God, it's got to be the program that the passport, Western Digital Passport has.
Right, and the same thing on the new one, which is what Steve is saying. If you use the same program, it's going to say, oh, we see that this drive is already being used by somebody else.
So when I plug it back in or to the new computer, what should I do? I can do it right now.
There may be a setting in that program to tell it you want to put multiple computers on the same drive.
Yeah, I don't know. None of us know that program well, but
use a different program.
Right. The big thing is that program was a very simple program designed to let one user back up one computer.
So maybe the issue is that this external Western Digital has got to be probably at least 8 years old, just maybe not ready to take on a computer running OS X.
No, it's not the drive. It's the software.
Well, but now let's back up. If this is an 8-year-old hard drive, it might just be time to buy another one.
Okay, that's another good suggestion.
As Google has proved empirically over the last 20 years, the mean time between failure for hard drives is 5 years. So you're way on the upside of that curve,
mm-hmm.
although you don't use it constantly. But still, you're way on the upside of that curve. So or on the downside, coming off the other side of that curve. So were I you, I would buy a new drive. And they're they're cheap nowadays. Cheese and crackers.
Well, I know. I've got a couple of external flash drives that I've backed up some of my pictures and videos and some other stuff, documents. I just wanted to put this this Western Digital to use and just use to see if I can use it as a backup for my the new computer.
Yeah, I would. It's a great idea. I don't think I would waste a lot of time on it.
All right. Well, I appreciate your opinions. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah. All right. Have fun.
Bye bye.
Especially with the price of hard drive these days, it's so
right.
So cheap.
Inexpensive.
All right, so I'm looking at Newegg, and I see a refurbished 40 gig drive for $30.
And 40 gig is ludicrously tiny.
Right, so one is refurbished. Stay away from that. 40 gigs, that's not enough.
Yeah, a terabyte.
Right, you can buy terabyte hard drives for cheap.
I'm trying to
now.
Get out of the terabyte line here, or trying to get out of the refurbished line. Don't show me refurbished. I don't see a button to uncheck refurbished.
Probably up in here somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, the basic idea is, now what Bodan is doing is great. It's the thing everybody should be doing, backing up to an external hard drive that is not normally connected to the machine is also a very good idea, because that means that it cannot be encrypted by ransomware. The problem with that, of course, is you're now dependent on your human ability to plug the drive in and use it, and that means you're dependent on your human mind to remember to plug in that drive and back it up. Some people are detail-oriented enough to do that on a regular basis, and those, detail-oriented people, not to say anal-retentives, make the best system administrators, and I was one for 20 years. So, in terms of doing it, you now have to physically actually do it. Having a program that does it automatically means that you don't have to remember that anymore. But then you run into all the issues we said earlier.
Yep.
You might end up backing up encrypted files, et cetera, et cetera. So it's important to be very careful how you back things up. Make sure you have multiple types of backups. Because a backup that is automatic is great, because you don't have to think about it anymore, and you can make and it'll just always be happening. But a backup that you perpetrate by hand means that it is much less likely that if you are hit by ransomware, that backup will also be hit by ransomware. So having a multitude of possibilities, as I've always said, system administrators, and you are one now, by the way. You don't get a choice in that anymore. You are a system administrator. Get over yourself. System administrators cannot be paranoid enough. And the second thing is you do not have enough backups. I don't care how many you have. You do not have enough.
It was a 4-terabyte drive for $99.
Yeah.
Right next to a 2-terabyte drive for $89. So once you buy the enclosure, adding more terabytes is almost insignificant.
It's practically insignificant.
It's a 6-terabyte drive for $159.
Exactly.
I remember paying $5,000 for 100 megabytes.
Yep.
And that was cheap.
And that was cheap, and you were delighted to get it.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Well, good afternoon, guys. And Steve, you can call me Joe.
Okay.
You can call me Joe.
Okay. The gentleman who just called, it was perfect for my question. I was going to call you and call in for this today. I just bought an 8-terabyte hard drive. I want to add to my backup procedures. I want to put all 3 of my computers on one backup to one hard drive.
Sure.
But every time when I go on the internet to see what I should use for how to do it, what software to use, everything is at least 5 years old. So I'm going to call you guys, and hopefully you can tell me what software should I use to back up multiple computers to one hard drive.
Are you looking for free?
I would like free, but if I have to pay something, pay a pittance, I will do that.
A pittance.
We have recommended Cobian backup in the past.
Right, that's $5 a month.
Well, they have a free version. I think the previous version is free. The current version, there's a small backup fee.
Right.
Most of the time when you, I don't want to download it, I want to see more about it. Most of the time when you pick a destination for your backup, instead of pointing it to the hard drive, put a folder on the hard drive and say, this is computer A, computer B, computer C. And then when you do your backup,
it goes to that.
You tell it which folder to go into, and then you can have multiple computers on one big hard drive.
There are multiple sets of programs. One is called EASUS To Do Backup Free. EASEUS. EASUS To Do Backup Free. And it lets you do full system backups, as well as, full differential and incremental file backups. And it's free. Komodo makes a backup program, and it's ridiculously flexible. You can store backups on local hard drives, network attached drives, FTP servers, company's own Komodo cloud server. Cloud server costs. So Komodo, Komodo, is good. Yaomei, Aomei, Backupper Standard, is another good one. There's a tiny little program called Personal Backup. It's small, it's easy to use, but it creates data backups, but it does not create images. And then there's Genie Timeline. So there's a bunch of them out there, and most of these don't assume anything. So you do have more setup to do, but as Steve said, you can say you know, Steve's computer is one folder, et cetera, et cetera. Each person gets their own, each computer, rather, gets their own folder. So you can say, you know, desktop is one folder, laptop is another folder, whatever. And that will let you use that 8-terabyte drive to collect multiple backups. Now, again, now you've got to play around with the settings and making sure that you don't run out of disk space and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? But that's all on you, and you know that because you're using a by-hand backup program.
Now, you keep saying folders, not partitions, but folders.
Yeah, just fold, just regular, make a folder, right. Done.
That way the one partition doesn't get full and then another one is empty and then you got to worry about repartitioning them.
Right.
Okay.
And now what Nick does, you've got a NAS, a network attached drive. It's basically a hard drive with an Ethernet port.
Right.
And then all the computers see it through the network. You don't have to take the drive physically to each computer and plug in the USB port.
Right.
And you're probably running rsync at a command line.
I'm running rsync personally, yes. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm running rsync at the command line, 3 o'clock every morning. It backs up. But I have a folder that is private to me. Elaine has a folder that is private to her. Amelia, when she saw me, has a folder that's private to her. They can, and of course I can see everything because I'm the administrator. But basically, that way I'm backing up to my folder. She's backing up to her folder. Amelia's backing up to her folder. Files, even if we have duplicates of files, they don't interfere with each other. And that's the beauty of putting them all in folders. But as Steve said, it's one giant 3-terabyte drive, so I don't have to worry about my partition being full, but Amelia's is almost empty because she's now living in Arizona, et cetera, et cetera.
Sounds good, gentlemen.
All right.
Have a joyous holiday.
You too. Keep smiling.
Guys, you need to start smiling.
Exactly. Now that you're going to be backing up, you can smile.
Yep.
That makes it easier.
And on the Macintosh side, the Time Machine software built into the Mac is automatically set up to do that. It will do incremental backups. It keeps all your changed files. It puts separate folders for each computer you back up to. And you can run a wireless or network backup with Apple's Time Capsule, which is Apple's network drive.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites. I'm the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Lynn from Webster on the line. Hi, Lynn. What's up?
Hi, Nick and Steve. I've got just a comment about Time Machine.
Sure.
It will round robin between different drives that you are backing up to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another nice feature. You can have multiple hard drives, so you take one off-site in case of fire, flood, theft, and it will just pick up with the next one. So I think they added that in 10.8, so you have to have a fairly recent OS to do multiple hard drives on a single computer. But that's for especially for businesses, you definitely want to have an off-site backup to be able to recover from disaster.
Now, there's one other thing. My oldest brother upgraded recently from XP to 10, and he is bemoaning the loss of Outlook Express. Matter of fact, he has stopped using email because of the lack. Now, I had tried run his XP, but that, of course, was disabled on the next Windows 10 update. And I was wondering if anyone's had experience with OEC 260. That's OE Classic.
I don't know. If anybody has had any experience with OEC, what is that OEC? What's the number?
That's version 2.0. 2.6.0.
Microsoft's replacement is Windows Live Mail, and that's a free download. And a lot of people use Thunderbird as an email client. But what we're seeing, and more people now are just using web So your Gmail website or the Hotmail website. We have a lot of people. A lot of our customers are still using Yahoo and using the Yahoo website and complaining about all the ads because Yahoo's website is full of ads. And so our answer is don't use the website. Use the mail program. Then you don't see the ads.
Yes, unfortunately, he has folders with data that he has stored in there, and he went
local folders. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The problem is that Microsoft has, in fact, abandoned it. And it's always been a proprietary program, so there's no, as we see with many, Thunderbird is one of them.
Well, yeah. So Microsoft would expect you to buy the commercial version of Outlook, or you can use their free Windows Live Mail program under Windows 10.
Right. Now, with Outlook Express, you can, of course, export your mail and then import it into something else. But that can be a fairly tedious process.
And it's also too late because the new machine's been up and running and the old machine is gone.
Right. I know that at least in the old version, Thunderbird.
Most of the programs will read from Outlook Express. Windows Live Mail will. Nick is checking Thunderbird because they know so many people were using Outlook Express that you want to bring your mail along when you go to a new program.
Yeah, Thunderbird will import Outlook Express.
So if he's got the files saved and brought over to the new computer, that should be okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't work the same. And you're talking about a guy who's in his 70s. So I was hoping that OEC would... the answer for him.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, something you can download and try. Just if someone else is familiar with it, then...
and can help him.
Then give us a call in.
Yeah, sorry.
Yep, thank you.
Yep. It is a problem. That's why so many people, as Steve said, are going to webmail, because it's just, it doesn't change. It doesn't disappear as easily. But really, in terms of...
Although the webmail changes all the time, we get people calling that their Yahoo email looks different.
Yeah.
Because Yahoo changed the page. And,
right.
And they said, well, make them change it back. Well, okay, we'll get right on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we run Yahoo. I don't like the way the Google page looks. Can you change it back again? No, yeah, I'll do that right away.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a second. Try it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is OE Classic.
I don't see any screenshots.
Or you could tell them just.
There's a lot of testimonials on how great it is, but there's no screenshot to show me.
No, you just got to tell them to call Google and get permission. If they get permission, you'll change it back for them.
Right. Not a problem.
Because I'm getting a hold of Google.
Exactly. But yeah, there is an OE Classic.
There is a screenshot.
Program.
Yeah, that looks pretty much like. Outlook. But to me, every email program looks the same. You've got your buttons at the top. You've got your list of mailboxes on the left.
Yeah,
And you've got your list of messages and the message on the right. So, to me, I can use any mail program because they all look 99% the same.
We've had people who called us up in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
Something's different in my email. Something wrong with my email. You go there, and they somehow made smaller icons.
Mm-hmm.
And it is now not the same, and they can't handle it.
Technically correct? The best kind of correct?
Or the other thing is they say, well, it's not showing as much on the screen as it originally used to, because they've added so many toolbars from this program program that it keeps pushing it down.
Somebody sent them a rich text message that had big letters in it. Oh, make everything like that. Well, that's the other person did that. There's not much I can do at this end.
Right. It's a real issue when people get very, very, very used to something, and then that thing either goes away or changes in some way.
Yeah.
It's the same problem that people have learned to live with cars, because they say this all the time. It's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive. You just don't know where the cigarette lighter is, assuming you still use a cigarette lighter.
But you can usually be pretty sure that the turn signal is on the left and the gear selector is on the right.
And you can be pretty sure that there's a file and edit and print menu.
Yep. Most everything is there, just in a slightly different position.
Right.
I remember an episode of Top Gear where they were talking about how that got decided. The brake is on the left, the gas is on the right, the gear select, you know. And it was like 1910 or something like that when some car came out that way, and then everyone said, well, that's pretty good, let's all do that. So it was never formally adopted as a standard. It's just everyone started doing it the same way.
Yeah. And that is the informal adoption of a standard.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Joel?
Hi, guys. That's Joe with an L. And I was just thinking about the last caller. And wanted to remind folks that Windows 10 does come with a built-in mail program. It's called Mail, and it's compatible with pretty much any mail service that you use. And,
yes.
I think what Nick was saying, the best thing for folks to do at this point, whether you're a Roadrunner or Spectrum, Frontier, is to move to an online service like Gmail.
Right.
Which is portable, and you don't have to worry about, losing your computer or what computer you're on or changing services or moving. It just goes with you, and it's really good. And it will work with the mail program that's built into Windows 10.
Right. The big problem that somebody like Lynn's brother is having is that Outlook Express, for many, many people, was used as a POP service, which meant it downloaded your mail to you, and it disappeared from the server.
Right.
And so when you get a new machine, all your old mail is gone. But when you use an online service like Gmail or Microsoft Mail or Apple Mail or any one of those, you can set that up so that they keep the mail. And then it doesn't matter what machine you use or where you are or what you're doing. So, for example, my mail is in Gmail, and I keep it up on the server. If I'm on my desktop, I can see my mail. If I'm on my laptop, I can see my mail. If I'm on my Chromebook, on my phone, on my tablet, I can see my mail everywhere without an issue. And that's the way people should do it now, but that doesn't help somebody like Lynn's brother, who has probably 10 years of...
That's water over the dam. Yeah.
That's another point to back up your computer, because then you would still have those old mail files and could read them in a new program.
Well, exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Joe with an L, we appreciate that.
We're always excited when our customers buy a new computer before their old one is dead.
Yes.
Because they always come in and say, well, can you copy my data?
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. It's dead.
Yeah.
If you'd come in a month ago, then, yeah, we could have copied it.
Right. So is Joe L. Superman's country cousin? Anyway, the
inquiring minds.
Exactly. But you're absolutely right. If you've got backups, if you're going to buy a new computer, first make a backup of the old computer. That's the number one thing. So that if something happens, you still have those data.
And both Mac and Windows have a migration assistant that will copy all your files from your old computer to the new computer.
Right.
Assuming the old one still works.
Yeah.
So that's a big assumption.
Right. But if the old one dies and you have backups, you're still good.
Yep.
If you don't have backups, oh well.
You're hosed.
There's nothing that can be done. Can you get my data back? No.
Maybe.
Drive Savers might. They will give you what, $1,000 to take a look at it?
Well, looking at it is free. Well, using our dealer referral code,
right?
But it could cost upwards of $2,000 or more to try to get your data back. In fact, we had one customer this week got all their data back, and they're happy. Another customer this week did not get their data back, and they're sad. There's a hardware fault in the NAND controller, so it was on their phone, which is even worse. And so the NAND chips are inaccessible, and they can't read them to get the data back. They found another company that said they can fix the NAND chip. I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll see if she gets her data back. Yeah. But, have your backup before the thing dies makes it so much easier.
And, oh, by the way, you can back up your phone.
Yeah.
If you're on an Android phone, there's about 1,000 different programs that'll do it. I use one called Lookout, which is an antivirus program. It's a backup. It's a Find My Phone. It pretty much does everything, and it's not expensive at all. And there are equivalents on
the Apple side. We've got Apple iCloud backup is built into the phone. Sync it to your computer for free. The big thing we see with the online backups is possibly needing to buy more storage space, especially for large photo libraries. But those prices are coming down. Apple charges 99 cents a month for 50 gigs of storage. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Google still gives you the best deal on storage, especially for pictures. You get 15 gigabytes of free storage to split between mail and documents. But then Google Photos is free, unlimited storage for photos below 16 megapixels.
Right.
Which almost all cameras are these days.
Which most cameras, my camera is 16 megapixels. Yeah. So I win. In terms of documents, if you set it up so that when documents are stored in Google Docs, it converts them to Google Docs format, which you can convert them back when you bring them down, by the way.
Yep.
But if you save them as Google Docs format, that does not count against your storage. So I've got 15,000 documents. I've got about 15,000 pictures. And I'm using a total of, I think, 2 gig because I've got some... fairly large PDF documents up there.
And I had forgotten that my photos sync to Google Photos automatically, so they're all there.
They're all there. Well, and I do that too. So my wife was complaining the other day. She wanted to send some pictures. They're building a new shed at the public market that she'll be moving into, and there were some issues, and she wanted to send pictures to the people.
She's moving into a shed?
They call it a shed. They call it the it's the winter shed and the A shed and the B shed. A and B and C are, in fact, actual sheds. They're pillars with roofs. Mm-hmm. The winter shed is actually a building, and the new one's going to be very sexy. But she was having an issue, and she wanted to send pictures, but the picture was too big to send through the phone as an attachment. So I said, It's already saved up to Google Docs. Just share it with the people you need to send it to, and let them download it, and everybody wins. And she did that, and she was very, very happy. So that worked out. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our returning caller, I believe, is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up now, Andy?
Well, I tell everybody you're a gentleman. Gee whiz.
Ha! We love you, Andy. What's up?
I know. I think I got an answer on the anti-exploit.
Oh, good.
Did some looking around, checked the services and all that good stuff and startup. Found it on the startup listed as malware antibytes, but there's also malware. It's Malwarebytes anti-exploit, and then Malwarebytes was there also.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at it going, okay, and then I went over and looked at the apps and all, and I looked everywhere. The only place it showed up was under startup menu. Now, I remember getting an email from Malwarebytes that they were going to incorporate anti-exploit into the main program rather than have it being a separate add-on.
Right.
And so I went looking, and sure enough, Malwarebytes is out in the on the C drive. It's under the program file subdirectory. Malwarebytes anti-exploit is under the program files paren x86.
Uh-huh.
Looking for commonality in files, there isn't. Okay, fine. So I said, well, okay. Went into Revo. Revo can't find Malwarebytes anti-exploit. It just doesn't exist as a separate program. So I'm beginning to think, okay, when it uninstalled itself and brought in the new version 3 software, for whatever reason, it didn't get rid of the Malwarebytes anti-exploit, which is now incorporated inside the program.
Which used to be a separate program, yeah.
Right.
So I stopped the service, went out, deleted the subdirectory in the x86 subdirectory, because it's not connected to the other one at all, but I can tell.
Right.
Took it out, didn't empty the trash, but I put it in the trash.
Good.
And rebooted the machine. No error message, and everything seems to be working fine.
Well, there you go.
There's no way to tell whether anti-exploits is still working or not, but I'm not getting the error message, at least.
Well, right, and theoretically, it's built into the new version of Malwarebytes, so if you have the new version of Malwarebytes, you still have anti-exploits.
And it might be somewhere in the settings.
Right.
Why would you turn off the anti-exploit? Because you want to be exploited.
Right.
Well, you wouldn't, but the point being is that somewhere in the auto uninstall routine, somebody missed whatever they needed to put in there.
Human error.
Yeah, or my machine just had it in a different place and it missed it, or whatever. But I think that will solve, because my machine and my wife's machine are set up identically, and I never got that problem.
Right.
So I don't know. Next step before I get rid of that out of the trash is I'll flip my machine on and go check the subdirectories and see what's still hanging around in mine, and check the task manager and see what's running and isn't running.
Perfect.
Yep.
So just quick follow-up and so forth and so on.
Perfect. Thanks,
and
Andy.
We'll
good detective work.
Thursday?
Probably this Thursday at St. John's is the Rochester Googles, where we meet every once a month, the first Thursday of the month, and talk about all things Google. We'd love to have you join us, whether you're a Chromebook user or an Android user, or you just use the search engine or Google anything, any Google thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 41 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have Joe from Cheat.
Cahuaga, New York.
Don't ever move, Joe. What can we do for you today?
See, I knew Joe would call.
Gee, Steve. I didn't know I was so, prominent on your mind that you confuse me for other people. I don't know.
See, you should hear him during the commercials. Yes. Joe, call in, Joe. Scare
well,
me.
Anyway, I think it's important to practice things you don't do often.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you this much. A good feature of Google Keep is that it basically has to-do lists. What I use that for is a checklist. And I have a checklist for when my IP address changes, you know, when Verizon decides it needs to assign me a new one. Because I have to log into my registrar and tell them, oh, okay, I have a new IP address and stuff like that. And if I forget to do any of that stuff, that is very much not good for the things that I'm doing.
Right.
I discovered two IP address changes ago, because it doesn't happen that often. I mean, I get to the one step, it's like, do this. Well, I can't remember what file that's in.
Yep.
It seemed clear at the time, but, you know, I had to amend my checklist saying, oh, okay, to do this, you alter this file.
Yep.
Okay, to bring that up to date to what we're talking about today, how do you know your backups are any good if you don't try a restore every once in a while?
Exceptional point. Making a backup is not a backup. Restoring a backup successfully is a backup.
As you were saying, hard disks are cheap, and if you can kind of afford the downtime, put one of those cheap hard disks in your computer and see if you can restore the operating system, restore your applications, and then restore your data. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be in a world of hurt about what the heck do I do when my hard disk fails or my SSD fails.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the tale you tell, Steve, of the customer that comes in that was backing up all their link files instead of the files themselves. It's like, that's one way to discover your backup isn't what you thought your backup was.
Yeah, stacks of CDs for years copying the shortcut to the file, not the file itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You're absolutely right. People need to restore every once in a while to prove that the backup actually worked, because that is indeed the only way you can tell. Now, depending on the program you use and your method of backup, you can restore a single file. You know, the sampling method, restore a file here, a file there, see what happens. Or, as Joe just suggested, you can throw a separate hard drive in there and restore everything. I do not back up my operating system and programs, because everything I use is Linux. And so if something goes wrong, I'm just going to put the newest version on again anyway. So what the hell? And there's another aspect of that, if I can cut in for a second here, Joe.
Absolutely.
There's a
thing that system administrators do called a site book. And that is step-by-step instructions on how to set up that machine. So, for example, you get a call at 5 o'clock in the morning. The server's down. You need to reset it up because we've got extra hardware or it's just a whatever. So you go in at 5 o'clock in the morning. You're not awake. You're not thinking clearly. But you've got a site book in which is written step-by-step every single thing you've ever done to set that machine up. You follow that site book, and when you're done, you've set up that machine again. So if you had a site book, you would know what folders and files and what you had to look for that you haven't seen in a month and et cetera, et cetera. I've kept site books for 20 years. I keep a site book for my home machine now, which is a pain in the neck to update when I add a program because I put the program I'm entering, the command I use to install it, any changes I made to files, what that program does and why I installed it. So I've just purchased, for example, a 3D printer. And so I'm adding Blender and I'm adding a Slicer and I'm adding a couple of other programs.
Should we post the link to that?
We should.
A $99 3D printer.
Yeah.
If the early bird special was $49.
Yeah. I missed the early bird special. I had to get the $99 one. But the basic idea is if I ever rebuild a machine but don't want to install that printer, I can skip that whole little section. But if I do want to install it, I don't have to think. I just go to that section and say, I do this and this and this and this and this. And when I am done, it is set up. So if
my favorite tool for doing that, again, would probably be Google Keep because It's the only thing you have to have is credentials to get into your Google account, and it's tough to lose that way. And
exactly
you can set
right.
Set it up as a checklist.
That is exactly right. I keep mine as a Google Doc because it's about, 70, 80 pages at the moment.
Holy cow!
When I am setting up
very detailed
a system, I am very detailed. Drive.google.com, if I could learn to spell.
Some might say obsessively detailed.
One might say, listen, I said this before. The systems administrators put the hyphen in anal retentive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a systems administrator, you cannot be paranoid enough. And
notation is always great in any type of programming or anything else.
That's right.
I mean, that's one thing.
Also, if I could provide a counterpoint, I back up almost everything. There's some things that I know that will not transfer from system to system, like the UUIDs for the file systems.
Right.
There's a file that keeps track of that, similar things. I back up just about everything. I'd rather back everything up and choose to ignore it on the restore rather than not back something up and wish, I wish I had that somewhere on the disk.
Yep. Right. Yep.
And a lot of times you think of it, you can have a fast backup, which is a long restore, or you can have a long backup, which is a fast restore. Generally.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So most people want
to. I'm a fan of rsync for my backups, so goes as individual files, and if I want to pick a certain file out of that that I just deleted, it's really easy to find.
Yep.
It's one of the reasons I installed a tape drive in my computer a long time ago is that you have a way to disconnect that backup from the computer. You eject the tape, and these days it's like, unplug the USB drive. That is your backup disk because nothing can get at it because it's not even plugged in.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right. Have fun. So here's a small example. I've got a little timer plug-in. It's an alarm plug-in that sits in the notification area. Mm-hmm. It's called XFCE4 timer plug-in. I say it's a timer alarm which resides in the notification area. The command to install it is sudo apt-get install xfce4-timer-plugin. And then there's the default command I use for the alarm that I've got. It's the alarm from Inlake Flint.
Yeah.
Uh, um, the president's phone. And so I have everything there. So I don't have to think. I just have to install it. Now, that's a very trivial example, but there, you know, there's a bunch of stuff in there, and it's all working. It's all good. I can't stress enough how important it is to have backups, how important it is to have some idea of what you installed, when, where, and how, and the ability to quickly and easily reinstall that when you need to is very, very important. And only the only way that you're going to be able to do a quick restore on a machine is to have something like that available to you. So you need to keep track of that stuff in some way or other in order to make sure your system is running efficiently and can be restored if necessary.
And it's also important to keep it up to date. We have so many customers, what's your password? And they'll, page 1 has a password, page 6 has a password, page 50 has a password. Which one? I don't know which is one. And then they realize they never wrote the new password down on page 100.
Right. All right, that's it. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. We want to thank each and every one of you who called in. For those of you to whom we did not get, I'm sorry. You just have to call in earlier next week. Please have a safe and enjoyable 4th of July. Some of you will want a quiet 4th. Some will want to have the loudest 4th that's possible. Whichever one you take, that's up to you. Good luck. Have a great time. God bless America. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to Soundbites. We will see you in 166 hours.